You sent over that absolutely fascinating book, Pizzerias de Valor Patrimonial de Buenos Aires, and it got me thinking.
Oh, yeah.
I stumbled across this fact. Buenos Aires is the third largest consumer of pizza globally.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Yeah, right after Italy and New York City. Isn't that
Yeah,
incredible?
that was pretty amazing.
So, given all the great stuff in that book about Buenos Aires pizzerias, we figured let's really dig into it. What makes pizza such a, well, such a thing there?
Absolutely. And it's more than just, food. This is really a deep dive into the cultural heart of Buenos Aires. The fact that the city government published this book, well, that says a lot, doesn't it?
It really does.
It shows how important these places are to their heritage. It's a cultural publication all about protecting and promoting this specific part of their identity.
Okay, so this isn't just some guidebook then. It's like a serious study.
Oh, definitely. It's a proper exploration. Loads of collaboration authors, researchers, photographers, they've really documented these places meticulously. If you look at the index, it covers the whole history of pizza itself and then zooms in, neighborhood by neighborhood, on the pizzerias across BA.
Okay.
It's really comprehensive.
So our mission today, kind of drawing from the book, is to figure out why. Why are these pizzerias so central to Buenos Aires? What makes them tick?
Exactly.
Because I get the feeling it's way more than just, grabbing a quick slice.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to uncover some really fascinating stories, little details. You'll see why they're not just restaurants, they're like cultural landmarks. The history of pizza gets tangled up with the story of Buenos Aires itself in some, well, pretty surprising ways.
All right, let's start at the beginning then. Where did pizza actually come from? Italy, obviously, but what were the very early days like?
Well, the roots, they go back much, much further than what we'd call pizza today. In the Mediterranean, ancient folks had flatbreads with toppings.
Right, basic stuff.
Yeah, historians point to Roman dishes, things like moretum, placenta, hoffa, basically just water and grain creations. Very early ancestors.
Placenta.
Yeah, no, the name. But it was kind of flat cake. There's even this story, maybe apocryphal, about Roman patricians. They supposedly used cooked dough as plates, and then the slaves eat the plates afterwards with the leftover bits.
Talk about practical.
Right. Early recycling, I guess. So from those ancient flatbreads, things started to shift when the Greeks colonized southern Italy.
Naples.
Exactly. Neapolis, which became Naples, as a busy port city, it was this melting pot, lots of different influences coming together. That probably helped shape its food scene early on.
And then the big one, the tomato arrives. That must have changed the game.
Totally. The Columbian Exchange, 15th century, brought tomatoes from Central America. Now, they weren't an instant hit, but eventually, yeah, they became crucial. Revolutionized pizza.
So before actual pizzerias popped up.
It was often street food in Naples, sold by vendors. Simple, cheap. People eat it, folded and four.
Folded.
Yeah, all libretto, they called it. I get a little book. Easy to eat right there, standing up or walking around.
I can picture that. So, when did dedicated pizza places, the pizzerias, start appearing?
Between the 1700s and 1800s, pizza really became the food for Neapolitans. And that's when you see the rise of actual pizzerias, places specifically for making and selling pizza.
And they had a standard setup.
Pretty much. A wood-fired oven was key, naturally. A marble counter for the dough, shelves with ingredients, simple tables. And they'd often display the pizzas out front to tempt people walking by.
Makes sense. And the famous ones, Marinara and Margarita, they have origin stories too, right?
They absolutely do. The first one to get a proper name was the Marinara. That was Naples around 1860. Super simple garlic, tomatoes, oregano, olive oil, but tons of flavor.
Simple but good.
Exactly. And there's a funny story about King Ferdinand II. Apparently he loved it. But his wife, the queen, a Habsburg princess, thought it was too, common for royals.
Uh-oh.
So the story goes, he had to sneak out in disguise to eat it. Shows it was really the people's food.
Huh. A secret royal pizza craving?
Yeah.
And then the margarita, the iconic one.
That's the one. 1889, Queen Margarita, King Umberto Lorat's wife, visits Naples. The Antica Pizzeria Brandi, which actually grew out of an even older place, made three pizzas for her.
And she picked her favorite.
The one with tomato, mozzarella, and basil. The colors of the new Italian flag, of course.
Red, white, and green. Clever.
Apparently, she liked its milder flavor compared to the garlicky marinara, so they named it after her. Pizza fit for a queen.
So from Naples, how does it jump the Atlantic and become this huge deal in Buenos Aires, like the book describes?
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, especially based on the source.
Yeah.
You'd naturally think, okay, Italian immigrants brought pizza, end of story.
Right. Seems logical.
But the book actually highlights something different. It says the mass adoption, the setting up of actual pizzerias as businesses, was largely driven by Spanish immigrants.
Spanish immigrants.
Really? Yeah. Their entrepreneurial spirit. It's a fascinating twist in the story. It wasn't just Italian culture being transplanted, it was this fusion. Spanish business drive really shaped this key part of BA's food identity.
That is a twist, but it helps explain how Buenos Aires ended up being the third biggest pizza city in the world.
Exactly. And the crucial thing is, the porteños, the locals in Buenos Aires, they didn't just copy Neapolitan pizza.
They made it their own.
Totally. We
Yeah.
reinvented it, used local tastes, different ingredients maybe.
Yeah.
It became something distinct, not better or worse, just uniquely porteño.
So, what did those early pizza days in Buenos Aires look like? Street vendors, like in Naples.
Yeah, definitely. Early on, you had street vendors, often Italians or Zenese, the
Yeah.
Genoese dialect. They'd sell pizza, but also Fana. That's a chickpea flour flatbread, really popular there, too.
Pizza and Fana, the classic combo.
You got it. And the book tells this specific story about a vendor named Priano in La Boca.
The famous neighborhood.
Right. He was apparently one of the first to sell fugaza, that's an onion flatbread, sometimes with cheese and feta there, carry them on his head in these big dishes.
Was head.
Yeah. And get this, Juan Bautista Priano, one of the owners of that early spot, was member number one of the Boca Juniors football club.
No way. Boca Juniors again? It seems like football and pizza are really linked there.
Oh, completely. It shows how food and local identity, especially football passion, are tangled up. Pizzerias became gathering spots, community hubs almost, places to celebrate wins, talk about the game. There's even another story about a Fana vendor called Pedrin.
Yeah.
He became like a character representing Boca Juniors on a super popular radio show in the 40s.
That's amazing. So when did proper sit-down pizzerias become common?
As they started popping up more, you see the industry getting organized. The Association of Pizzeria and Empanada Owners, APPYCE, was founded fairly early, 1939. That's a sign of growth.
So it wasn't just about food, it was livelihoods, community building.
Definitely. The book quotes someone, Luis J. Medrano, writing in 1949.
What did he say?
He talked about how pizzerias gave unemployed people a way to make a living, build community, especially when times were tough politically or economically. He called pizza this magical and tasty food, affordable, satisfying. It provided this kind of social and economic anchor.
That's really powerful for a simple dish. And then they started innovating locally, like pizza by the meter.
Yeah, that was Citadella Pizzeria in the 60s. Pizza by the meter became a bit of a trend.
Fun.
But maybe the biggest shift, like we touched on, was the ownership. Over a couple of decades, lots of pizzerias went from Italian owners to Spanish owners, especially Galicians.
Back to the Spanish entrepreneurs. Okay, so the book dives into loads of specific pizzerias. Let's talk about some of the icons. Each sounds like it has its own vibe.
For sure. Let's start with Tunian in Uttolgro. It's got this long history, really popular with students from nearby
My
schools.
neighborhood fixture.
Totally. Inside, you've got this amazing filetiero artwork, that classic Buenos Aires decorative painting style by Luis Source. Even has the San Lorenzo Football Club shield showing the owner's team.
Ha! Gotta show your colors. It's good there.
Their classic mozzarella. They often just say musa with olives and fina is a must. Also the Napolitana, fugazza con queso. Good solid stuff.
Sounds great. How about Los Campeones in Barracas? The
Yeah.
champions, guessing another sports link.
You bet. Los Campeones, over 50 years old, is packed with football memorabilia, like Arsenio Errico, Maradona, all the legends.
Cool.
And weirdly, a painting of a Renaissance pizzeria. It's a known hangout for artists and writers in Barracas, too. Champions of sport and art sharing a slice.
Love that image. Okay, Borgio in Belgrano,
Yeah.
Italian founder, Spanish owner later.
That's the one. Started by Mr. Bruggio in 1930, later taken over by a Spaniard. Classic porteño feel inside multiple counters, big wood oven, shelves stacked with wine and liquor bottles.
What's their specialty?
They're known for media masa pizzas, kind of a medium crust, not too thick, not too thin. Mozza, fugazza, calabresa are popular. And the fana from that wood oven gets a really special flavor.
Sounds delicious. Chacarita next, Albamonte. Gardel used to go there, the tango legend.
The one and only Carlos Gardel. Albamonte used to be called Sorrentino. And yeah, it was popular with entertainment folks, including Gardel.
Wow.
Their menu's broader now, but they still do great thin crust pizza and have this vibe of old Buenos Aires. Try the Mercedes Pizza Muta Fugazzetta, which is like fugazza but often richer, and anchovies.
A place Gardel liked. Must be special. And Santa Maria, also in Chacarita. It's been updated.
Yeah, Santa Maria has history but got a remodel, added a cafe, an art space.
Adapting.
But you can still see their old logo with a caravel ship. So mixing old and new.
Okay, heading to Flores. San Jose extra large pizzas and a birthday deal.
That's them. San Jose follows a tradition from an older place, La Perla de Flores. Their pizzas are huge, 41 centimeters.
That's massive.
Yeah. They do a Grand San Jose piled with toppings. And yeah, if it's your birthday, free pizza. Great way to build loyalty.
Definitely. Can't beat free birthday pizza. La Boca has more gems like Augusto for stone baked.
Augusto's specialty is pizza alla piedra, stone baked. Been doing it since the 60s. Known for great pizza and fainao with onions. Really crispy crust from the stone oven heat.
Nice. And you can't talk La Boca pizza without the big one, Banchero. Birthplace of fugazza con queso.
The absolute icon. Banchero. Started by Gustin Banchero from Genoa in 1893, first as a bakery. That's where fugazza con queso, the onion bread with cheese, was supposedly invented.
A game changer.
Totally. His son Juan opened the current spot on Brown and Suarez in 1932. Became the place to celebrate Boca Junior's wins.
Oh, of course.
Frequented by artists like Quinquello, Martin, even Gardel. The walls are just covered in photos of staff, customers. It's like a living museum of the neighborhood. Pizza and football history baked right in.
Amazing. And El Puente, the Ariel, is linked to Banchero.
Yeah. The owner, Ariel Manoni, learned the secrets, especially for fugazza con queso, from his dad, Mario, who is a master pizzaiolo at Banchero.
Keeping it in the family.
Right. El Puente de Ariel has lots of imagery of the old La Boca Bridge. Their media masa musa and fugazza con queso are huge hits with locals and tourists.
Moving over to La Paternal. Yatasto, it's mentioned by Cortázar, the writer.
Yes. Julio Cortázar mentions Yatasto, opened in 1953, in his story Divertimento. It's got a warm neighborhood feel, hanging hams, TVs on.
Cozy.
You can spot a Filetiato sign with a wine saying, even a copy of a Monet painting. A cool mix of literature and local life.
Then Mataderos has El Cedrón, famous locally and on a special corner.
El Cedrón is the big name in Mataderos. It's on Breccia Corner, named for the cartoonist Alberto Breccia.
Ah, cool tribute.
And there's a statue of the boxer Justo Suarez nearby. The pizzeria's logo even has the neighborhood shield. Very local.
Monte Castro 14, Maradona ordered from there, the Maradona.
The story goes, yes. El 14 has a strong neighborhood vibe, known for a special spice blend in their pizzas. Fugazza con queso and feina are big sellers.
And the Maradona story.
They proudly tell how he once pulled up in a white limo to order a chamoni moronese pizza ham and red peppers. That's legendary status right there.
Absolutely. Okay, Montserrat, El Chiste, the joke, funny name.
And the decor matches. Walls covered in cartoons by famous Argentine humorists. It's on a historic block, popular with students from the nearby National College.
The Continental has spots in Montserrat and San Telmo, right? And the San Telmo one has tango vibes.
Correct. The Continental has a few places. The San Telmo one definitely leans into the tango history with pictures of Gardel and Tita Moreo. There's even a photo, supposedly, of Gardel eating pizza there.
History on the walls. Noya Pompeya has La Blancada, named after an old general store. And it hosts tango events.
Yes, La Blancuada keeps that old Porteño spirit alive, often has tango nights, known for their super special fugazzetta and an ajo al olio garlic and oil pizza. Strong community ties there, too.
And Tropical, also in Nueva Pompeya, near the bridge.
Tropical, or La Tropical, yeah. Been a landmark near Puente Alsina for ages, over 40 years. Wood-fired oven smell fills the air. Their pizza de verdura, vegetable pizza, is a local creation.
Moving north to Núñez. La Farola de Núñez is a big family place.
Yeah, La Farola is large, definitely family-friendly. You always see huge stacks of takeaway boxes there. They do massive business. A real bustling neighborhood spot.
Also in Núñez, La Guitarrita. Special wood oven and football names.
La Guitarrita is all about pizza a la piedra. From a quebracho wood oven gives a unique taste. And yeah, they have creative Oscar pizzas named after football stars like Farinetta and Guitarrita. Very Núñez.
Palermo seems to have variety. Grappa's grilled pizza, Kentucky's history, Romario's thin crust.
Palermo's got options. Grio does pizza a la parrilla, right. Grilled for a super thin, crispy crust. Kentucky's been around since 1942. Very old school vibe. walls plastered with photos of Argentine celebs. And Romario in Las Cañitas is famed for really thin crust pizza from a wood oven. Different styles all in one neighborhood.
Parque Patricios has El Codo de Oro, known for generous portions.
El Codo de Oro, or El Codito, is a beloved neighborhood joint, famous for big servings, classic Porteño style, especially their fugaceta, a real local favorite.
Recoleta offers contrasts. The fancier Los Maestros and the classic El Cuartito.
Exactly. Los Maestros is a bit more elegant, some unique pizza toppings. El Cuartito, though, is pure classic Recoleta, like a gallery inside photos of Gardel, Goyeneche, Maradona, Messi. All have supposedly eaten there.
Wow.
Tango singer Goyeneche apparently loved their fugazza con queso.
Retiro has filo with Venetian roots and Piola, very Italian and artsy.
Filo brings a bit of Venice, yeah. Good food, cool modern design, even an art gallery downstairs. Piola started in Italy, has a really lively vibe, hosts art shows, music, lots of pizza choices there too, including lighter options.
San Nicolas seems like the historic heartland. Banchero Central, El Palacio de la Pizza, wedding.
Totally. San Nicolas is packed with icons. Banchero Central has these great old photos, Paris Celis artwork. El Palacio de la Pizza is right on Corrientes by the obelisk, been there forever. Famous window displays.
And Guerin, long history there too.
Guerin since 1932. Amazing story. Original owner supposedly left it to his employees. Still hugely popular, especially with musicians, writers. You can eat standing at the counter, get traditional Moscato wine.
Can't forget La Americana, Queen of Empanadas, but good pizza too. And Las Cuartetas, the one named after verses written on the wall.
La Americana, famous for empanadas, yes, but serves great pizza. Writer Gomez de la Serna liked it. And Las Cuartetas is legendary.
Good name.
From Alberto Vacaresa writing Cuartetas, four-line verses on the walls. Their Salvatore pizza is unique, all ingredients kind of mixed up.
Los Inmortales, also in San Nicolas, that name connects to tango.
It does. Los Inmortales, the Immortals, has big photos of Italian landmarks, but the name really refers to the photos of tango legends that also decorate the walls. A real homage.
San Telmo has Pirillo Tiny, standing only, loved by cabbies.
That's Pirillo. Super small, standing room only. Classic taxi driver spot. They used to post football scores in the window. Known for pizza de cancha. Stadium pizza often eaten cold with chili flakes. Very local thing.
Via Crespo has Angelin, creator of Pizza Canchera, and Via del Parque has Aromi, where La Farola used to be.
Angelin is famous for inventing Pizza Canchera, just sauce on a big crust, apparently. Unique style. And Aromi in Via del Parque took over the old La Farola spot. Does lots of stone-baked pizzas now.
Via Devoto has Jose, long tradition, Asturian owner, Via Luro El Barba, connected to Vélez Football Club.
Jose in Via Devoto since 1943, founded by an Asturian immigrant. Their Provenzal pizza, garlic, and parsley is popular. El Barba in Via Luro definitely shows its love for the Vélez Sarsfield football team and the decor.
And last one from the list, La Mazzetta in Via Ortuzar. Thick crust, standing room, and food critics argue about it.
La Mazzetta, known for pizza al molde, the thicker pan pizza, classic standing at the counter place. And yeah, it's funny, foodies either declare it the absolute best pizza in BA or strongly disagree. It definitely inspires passion.
Wow, what an incredible tour. It's just so clear that pizza in Buenos Aires isn't just food, it's like woven into the city's soul.
Completely. And the book shows it pops up everywhere in the culture. Musician Alfredo Casero has a funny song about all the pizza varieties. Pizza Conmigo.
A pizza anthem.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And writers like Alejandro Dolina, Antonio Saletic, they write about pizzerias eating pizza, often with this sense of nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Artists too, Lucio Cantini, Hermenegildo Sabat, they've painted pizzerias. There are even magazines just about pizza and empanadas.
Dedicated magazines. Okay, that's serious.
Right. Like Pizzas y Empanadas, Pizzeria Argentina, and APYCE, the association, runs a pizza and empanada week every year. It all just shows pizza is truly, like you said, a slice of Buenos Aires life.
It really sounds like it's part of the everyday rhythm for Porteños.
Yeah.
School kids grabbing a slice, families celebrating, just everything.
Exactly. It's this shared thing, a culinary bedrock connecting people across neighborhoods, across generations.
So wrapping this up, it's incredibly clear these Buenos Aires pizzerias are way more than just restaurants. They're living history, they're cultural centers, they tell the story of the city.
Hmm.
That blend of Italian roots, the Spanish adaptation, and that unique Porteño style.
Perfectly put. And hopefully, by hearing these stories, digging into the history behind these places, our listeners now have a richer appreciation for why this simple dish means so much to Buenos Aires' identity.
It really is amazing how much history and culture can be packed into something as seemingly simple as pizza. It makes you think, doesn't it? How does an everyday food like that become such a powerful symbol for a whole city, its culture, its history? And maybe, what other ordinary things in our own lives, our own local spots, hold similar fascinating stories we just haven't uncovered yet? Something to chew on, maybe.